Well, it's 8 o'clock. We don't quite have a quorum yet, but let's we can get started here. And when we get a quorum, we can do the minutes. And if the Department of Administration wants us to come down, and we can get... Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members.
Commissioner, and
good morning. For the record, I am Alice Roberts Davis. I'm the commissioner for the Department of Administration. Thank you for this opportunity to be here this morning to provide an overview of the governor's proposed budget for our agency. Last month we were here and we provided a more detailed overview of our agency and the very diverse set of responsibilities that we have that ultimately touch every part of state government. Today I'll be presenting the governor's recommended changes for our budget. The governor recommends a $500,000 increase in FY21 and ongoing for in lieu of rent. In lieu of rent covers rent expenses in the state capitol and other buildings on the capitol complex for entities that do not directly pay for their lease spaces. This would include the House, the Senate, ceremonial spaces in the capitol building, such as the rotunda, the ceremonial grounds, monuments, and memorials in the capitol area. This also includes the state office building, space used by state services for the blind, for vending operations and convenience stores, and then the reviser of statutes, legislative reference library, and congressionally chartered veterans organizations. Upon the completion of the capital restoration, the State Capital Preservation Commission drafted a capital maintenance handbook that, if we follow it, will prevent the building from falling back into disrepair. In lieu of rent funding will allow us to carefully follow that manual and provide the proper maintenance levels. Projects over the capital for the next 2 years include work on the loggia and the dome windows. The governor recommends $441,000 in both FY20 and 21 to provide funds for the Procurement Technical Assistance Center, or PTAC. This funding represents the state's 40% share of the total program budget and the required federal match funding provided by the Department of Defense. A direct appropriation is consistent with the way that other state programs hosting PTACs match their federal funding. This program, the Minnesota PTAC program, is a perennially recognized program across the country. They do amazing work there. They offer counseling and training to Minnesota businesses seeking to sell their products to state, local, and federal government entities. The PTAC joined the Department of Administration in 2017, and since then they've made significant impacts across the state. In that short time, they have assisted Minnesota vendors in achieving more than $300 million in direct and subcontracts with government entities. They've met with more than 1,100 Minnesota businesses, and they've conducted more than 6,500 hours of one-on-one counseling with businesses and business owners. Please note that the PTAC is a federal program with defined responsibilities and requirements, and so although the state is currently meeting its requirements with federal funding in kind with the staff time of our Office of Equity and Procurement, their missions are not entirely compatible. As the legislator specifically designates in Chapter 16C16, the OEP is supposed to be focused on assisting Minnesota businesses in economically disadvantaged areas, those owned by women, minorities, veterans, and people with substantial physical disabilities who are seeking state contracts with the state. OEP has been doing tremendous work with the PTAC, but this direct appropriation would allow them to focus on those core responsibilities laid out in statute for them. The direct appropriation would also allow the PTAC to expand its geographic reach in assisting Minnesota businesses. They would be able to add 3 counselors in greater Minnesota and then 1 additional in the metro with this direct appropriation. The governor recommends additional funding of $76,000 in FY20 and $56,000 ongoing to maintain the current level of service at the Department of Administration. This funding will support increased prospective retirement costs and modest rent cost increases at the department. While we continuously seek to find ways to become more efficient with existing resources, the base appropriation amount assumes no inflationary increases, and efficiencies alone will not allow us to offset the need for an operating appropriation increase. As it relates to retirement, not only do retirements cost the state valuable experience, but there are also significant separation costs. As I mentioned in my presentation last month, of our 544 team members, 107 are eligible to retire in the next 2 years. Last fiscal year, we had 18 retirements, and we've already had another 18 who have retired so far this year. As employees retire, we are required to pay out eligible vacation and sick time that they have accrued. The governor recommends one-time funding of $1.6 million in FY20 for the State Demographic Center to implement an outreach and engagement plan for the 2020 census. A general decline in survey participation and underfunding of the U.S. Census Bureau are challenges to a complete count for all states. In Minnesota, our congressional representation is at risk in the 2020 census, as is the more than $15 billion in federal funds distributed each year across our state and local governments. The $15 billion is an updated figure that reflects the larger scope of federal funds that are distributed based on census data. Given these factors, and to reduce the number of Minnesotans who are undercounted, specific initiatives would focus on hard-to-reach households, such as those with rural PO boxes, college students, and renters, meeting the challenges of our country's first digital census, engaging historically undercounted communities, and services like technology and translation to support local efforts. We expect about 50% of the funding will be passed on to community organizations and local governments as grants to complete the, to further the complete count. On April 1st, the census will be just 1 year away, and I'd like to invite you to join us for a census kickoff event April 1st at the Capitol. We'll provide this committee with additional information as details are available. A building efficiency revolving loan fund will provide upfront funding for improvements that will lead to energy and water savings in state-owned buildings. Possible eligible projects include weatherizing, energy-efficient light retrofitting, and smart irrigation controls. Agencies will take a loan from the account and repay as they realize savings. As the fund is replenished, admin will provide new loans for new projects. The governor recommends a one-time appropriation of $5 million from the general fund in FY20 to establish this program. Agencies often lack the upfront capital needed to make energy and water efficiency improvements to state-owned buildings. Limited operating funds are generally prioritized for an agency's core mission over these building sustainability initiatives. These funds would be transferred to a special revenue account to establish the revolving loan program. An admin will review and validate project submissions from agencies and then oversee the administration of the loans. The governor recommends a no-cost technical change to create a Minnesota Senate Building or MSB replacement fund. This will allow for proper accounting of funds that are already being collected through lease rates to pay for future asset preservation costs for the MSB. These funds are currently accumulating in an internal service fund used to account for the financing of all buildings on the Capitol complex. A new fund would allow admin to segregate the accumulated amounts of future deposits to ensure that they are allocated for the MSB repairs. This is generally good housekeeping and just a cleanup of that. The governor recommends moving the fiscal agent responsibilities for the Office of School Trust Lands from the Department of Administration to the Department of Natural Resources. This proposal will eliminate an unnecessary administrative layer, but does not alter the mission or the work of the office. The proposal is budget neutral and simply moves the current funding from admin to the DNR, which already provides space and operational support for the office. Admin's current role is as a fiscal agent for the office and has no policy involvement. The office will remain an independent appointment of the governor and subject to the oversight of the Legislative Permanent School Fund Commission and other appropriate committees. That concludes the overview. Thank you for your time and listening to the governor's proposed budget changes for our agency. I'm happy to answer any questions you have at this time.
And Commissioner, earlier when the governor's office was here with their thing, was a question arose about the school trust fund, the transfer of that, and can you elaborate a little bit more on that? We did have some talk with the Denise Dietrich, former Representative Dietrich, who had done legislation in the past to move that in your direction, and with some concern in the past. And the talk we had with her that yes, they do support this, but what is the reasoning for it besides just moving it over there, and she don't have any oversight besides that?
Mr. Chair, the reason is because we actually do not provide any additional oversight. We don't provide any policy review. This is really just us playing fiscal agent and signing off on charges and invoices as they come through. So there's really no change to the current way that the office would function, except for that they wouldn't have to send things to us as an additional layer of bureaucracy.
So it's streamlining.
It would streamline the process.
Well, thank you. And the other question I had that came to my mind when you talked about the setting up the account for the Senate office building, do we have a similar account for this building that we're in, the state office building?
Mr. Chair, I believe that money comes through the FR&R account, and so there is funding out there for building improvements that need to be done here and any maintenance that happens. This would just be ensuring that the money that's being paid directly in lease funds for the MSB are being allocated to that.
Okay, thank you. Representative Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I'm really excited about the Building Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund proposal. It seems like the problem with efficiency is you can never get the upfront capital, and so even though the projects save money over time and are going to save the taxpayers money, they're difficult to do in a year-to-year budget cycle. And I'm curious if you have a sense for what this $5 million would be able to accomplish in terms of the scope of the loans that would be available, and what, if you assess the full needs of the buildings to make them all energy efficient, what type of scale we're talking about? Would this get to half of that need, or would it not even scratch the surface?
Mm-hmm. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't have a specific dollar amount on what the overall need is for the entire enterprise. What I do know is that we expect that projects individually would range between $140,000 and $500,000 each. The loans would be granted for a two-year period of time. We think that's ample time for them to start to realize those energy savings and then start repaying the fund, and then we can move on to the next project. And so that's kind of the beauty of it, is that can be an iterative approach that we get through all of the needs across the campus and the enterprise.
Representative Long.
And do you have I know it's hard since you haven't picked the projects, but do you have an estimate for the payback time for the types of projects that you're thinking about?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we'd expect about two years for the payback for each individual loan.
Wow, that's pretty fast. Also very interested in the census project, and just want to thank you and the governor for bringing this proposal forward. I think this is another example of spending money now so we don't have to later, with the $15 billion at stake. And some of the numbers that I've seen are that for every undercounted Minnesotans, about $15,000 to the state that's in lost revenue over the decade. And so it matters a lot to our state if we get this right, not only for our state budget, but also, as you mentioned, for our congressional seat. We're right on the bubble right now, and I've heard our demographer say it could be as few as 10,000 people between us and the other state. So if we get our count right, that's going to matter a lot for our state. So thank you for bringing that forward.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you. That's absolutely correct. If I may go back to the Building Efficiency Revolving Loan Fund really quickly, statutorily the outside parameter is 5 years, and so we know that the payback will be between 2 and 5 years.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Long. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regards to the school trust fund lands, I happen to have sat on that when we transitioned that, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to register my concern about moving that office. It was moved deliberately because it was difficult for the school trust fund lands to function under the auspices of the DNR. And if it is budget neutral, my concern would be is that we're changing the direction again of the school trust fund lands As I recall, when I worked with Representative then Denise Dietrich, and I vaguely remember that Representative Rakovina also was very involved. And the concern was is that the funds that are supposed to go to the school trust fund lands do that and do not get absorbed in the DNR's budget. I realize they're different, but the reason we moved it was because that had become difficult, and we need to make sure that the funds that are owed to the schools goes to the school.
And Representative Keel, I know Representative Quam raised that question when the governor's office was here doing the governor's office budget, and I did reach out, and I have an email. I can forward you the email also. I did reach out to former Representative Dietrich and the School Board Association and ask them if they knew about this and if they were aware of this and were in support of it. And the response I got back was yes, they were, because as was stated here, there was some duplication of services, stuff having to go back and forth, and it took longer to get it done. My understanding, the administration is going to stay the same. The money is, it's just that the DNR is going to serve as the fiscal agent. But, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's exactly correct. There's absolutely no change to the functionality of the office, no change to where they are housed. The only change would be that they won't have to send payments through the Department of Administration. But from a policy perspective, everything will remain the same.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner. I just would express my concern that we keep tabs on that so that that fund does not get directed, finances get directed in the wrong direction. So,
I agree.
Thank you.
Representative Hertas.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Good morning, Commissioner. I wanted to comment also about school trust lands and maybe make a policy recommendation to you. I've served many years on the Education Finance Committee, and I've toured all around the state a lot of this trust land, which is largely managed by the DNR. A lot of the trust land is pretty much absent in southern Minnesota now, and there's been a shift in trading and repositioning of lands in northern Minnesota. But when you understand that the forest is managed in a long term, what the DNR does is they subtract their management fees from managing the forest, and it takes 20, 30, 40 years to grow a crop and to harvest school trust land. And so when you take that amount of money and divide it by the number of years, the yield is pretty insignificant. And so the way the school trust fund works is that all assets or proceeds in that trust fund, only the earnings or the interest is distributed to the school districts. So I would advocate that it would be much more efficient and much smarter to consider liquidating quite a bit of this school trust land and put it on the tax rolls in private ownership. This would benefit the schools by allowing school tax levies to be assessed upon the property. The schools would be earning revenue. In addition, the amount of money that would be recognized by the sale of these lands would then immediately go to the trust fund, and it too would earn annually a rate of return which far exceeds that which the forest management does. I think it's a wrong assumption that land in the stewardship of the private sector is going to be less cared for than run by the state. And in the case of much of this forest land, private individuals have the ability to manage the forest as well, and certainly have the technical guidance and assistance available through the DNR if they want to manage it for that purpose. There's a lot of school trust land that might be considered environmentally sensitive, and maybe that makes sense to keep that as school trust land, but there's so much of it that need not be in there. So I think overall we could reduce the cost of state government by not having more than 1 million acres under the auspices of the DNR, and privatize quite a bit of this land, and you would see greater revenues than what we're seeing from the school trust fund going to the school districts. Thank you.
I didn't hear a question there, but thank you for your comment. Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions to the commissioner. First of all, I also like the idea of the revolving loan fund because I think we can do some energy improvements and benefit, and the capital may not exist. The question, however, is how it will be administered. And I see in here there is some detail, but I'm wondering, do you already have the process set up, the software, whatever it is, to manage this?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I don't know that there'll be a specific software needed to manage this project. What would happen is admin would be the agency that reviews the submissions. We would grant the loans. We would ensure that the repayments happen, but I'm not sure that there's a specific software that would be needed. That would be done by our staff in the Office of Enterprise Sustainability.
Representative Vogel.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. But I guess that's the concern. Sometimes these things don't get, and I'm not accusing admin of doing anything wrong, but, you know, some of these programs don't always necessarily get done relative to with the scrutiny that they need, and I'm just wondering if you haven't set up the system yet for the repayment and the tracking of these loans, how that's going to be done or whether there'll be additional costs that you're going to run into to do that, to ensure that there's a process that's auditable and easy to follow and track.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vogel, I believe that the Office of Enterprise Sustainability will be able to put in all of the guardrails that we need to ensure that the loans go out and that they're repaid properly.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Will these loans be paid? How will they be paid back? In other words, are they going to be a monthly stipend that will come back from each agency or annually, or how is that going to work?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I actually don't know the answer to that off the top of my head. Again, the Office of Enterprise Sustainability, which is at the department, will be responsible for that, and I can get you an answer on specifically how they've designed the program.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd appreciate before, because once we turn this into a special revenue fund, it's pretty much out of our control because it isn't going to be appropriated any longer. I would appreciate if we could get that information. And I do have one more question, if I could.
And Commissioner, if you can get that information to the committee, we'll share it with the whole committee. That'd be great.
Absolutely.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you talked about the retirement, and then we talked briefly in my office about the retirement, the accrued benefits that are going to be due. Is there a reserve fund for those, or does that just come out of current cash so that as these budget documents are prepared from year to year, there's no reserve, we'll just have to appropriate more?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, for the general fund employees who are paid out of the general fund, of course, that doesn't roll over from biennium to biennium, and so that's why if we're accruing funds, we don't have it longer term in order to pay out those separation costs, and so that's the challenge that we face.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm gathering that there isn't a reserve fund sitting there and that it's going to be a cash expense. How much do you estimate that liability to be for Department of Admin?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Vogel, if all employees retired today, which obviously would not happen, it would be about $1.9 million.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I do think this is something as a committee that we should possibly look, because this is one department, and we know that we've got a labor force that looks more like my hairstyle than some others.
Mine too.
And therefore, when it came up, it was a question I had, because generally the private sector would have to accrue this as an expenditure and have it as a reserve account on their liability section. We don't. So we're going to be charged with coming up with the cash, and I think to quantify that so that the legislature has an idea across the board, not just Department of Admin, but all of the agencies we deal with, would be helpful and hopefully not too eye-opening, but possibly.
Well, Representative Vogel, there's, as was stated by the commissioner, there's some, because money they have left over at the end of the year, they don't have an ability in the departments to put it in a reserve fund. It rolls back into the general fund. So it'd be difficult. It might be difficult unless we do some law changes to a lot to do that. The other thing is, I would, from work that I know some people, the variance of how much that sick time and accrued vacation time, some people take it as soon as they get it, so there may not be a large cost to that. Some people, I worked with a guy that never took a day off, never took vacation, always gave back sick time because he could only accumulate so much. And so there are some people that may have a lot of it. So I think the variable there might be difficult to judge on that too. So, but Commissioner, you.
Mr. Chair, I agree.
Representative Vogel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I bring it up because, as I said, in the private sector, you have to accrue this. And you know what you have because you do know from year to year how much an employee is holding over. And I just do think that, as it came up, that it's something that we should be looking at because we are responsible. And to some extent, it's not that much different than a pension liability that's accruing. Unless the employees are willing to donate it back when they retire, which I'd find that hard to do if I was an employee, it is something that we have owing to us, and I just think it would be good to explore it. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and apparently this is the end of the row. On the building efficiency, where you're replacing lighting, I hope that they're actually doing it with LED instead of the compact fluorescents, which have a great deal of mercury. They're a hazardous activity. What sort of percent, I know a lot of the parking structures and et cetera worldwide are seeing the benefits of going to the LEDs because, well, frankly, in Minnesota they turn on, and during the winter, I mean. And then also they last for many, many, many years. So just an idea of the progress we are at with internal, external, situations with those, with that program.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, I understand your question to be how much internal, how much external funding is going to be used on this project. Did I understand that correctly?
Representative Quam.
No, there's a difference between internal lighting and external.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering what percentage of changeover, because external there's some high power
mm-hmm.
Lights, and it's a little different beast.
Yep.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I can get that information for you. I don't have that today. It really will depend on what projects the agencies bring forward as ones that they'd like for us to consider. So I wouldn't know at this point in time what types of projects would be contemplated.
It looks like you're getting phone a friend help there. Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, just anecdotally, the Capitol is completely LED, the transportation building is completely LED, and as we are doing these retrofits on buildings, we are using LED lighting.
Representative Quam.
Well, thank you. I mean, this is a good program, and I think there'll be extreme benefits. Pardon me, got a little bit of a cold.
It's been going around.
Yes. Back on the sick time and the retirement, I think it would be intelligent for us to look at having part of the fund, because when I was on the school board, there was an amount of money that we anticipated spending on personal days, etc., and that was part of our normal operating mm-hmm. budget because we had replacement personnel, etc., that if there was an internal account to where that was residing and the interest you're gaining on that would help to keep it going so you could cover the sick. The retirement, I think the state of Minnesota, it'd be prudent because I assume there's some transition over from the different types of the traditional retirement and a where you contribute to a fund. it'll almost be more intelligent for us to keep that, the retirement monies, in a an account, so that way we don't run into times are tough and now we get into a squeeze. Just like there's forward thinking in this relatively new Senate office building, that we need to have long-term costs and funds there. Just a thought for legislators to do a future bill, or maybe for the administration to look at a longer term way of having integrity to the funding of government. Thank you.
Look forward to a Quam Vogel or a Vogel Quam bill to make the law changes that we need to allow the agencies to set that money aside for future use.
Mr. Chair, I'm approaching the limit of bills I can introduce this year, therefore maybe next year.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is probably more of a comment because I know we've got other stuff and I don't want to belabor this, but just to give you guys a little bit of background, my computer is updating, so I can't get to my notes. So I'm going to do this from memory, so if I'm not exactly right, you can correct me. But the school trust lands, we'll go back to that, they're supposed to be under the purview of the legislature, not the governor's office. So we're supposed to be in charge of managing those school trust lands. And this body worked very hard to get a manager to the school trust lands because the DNR was not doing a proper job in accessing the revenue from these lands. And they've just been sitting there idle. And the gentleman that was appointed to that, or hired for that, has a very good plan to access that. But because of the way we're set up, the Department of Natural Resources has been stifling his efforts. And so they, for all practical purposes, they've been managing these lands and not doing a very good job. And so we also worked very hard to keep that position out of the hands of the DNR, so that one day this guy, this would come back the way it's supposed to be, into the hands of the legislature through this gentleman, or in the future, whoever it is, to bring us the information from these lands and what we can access from them. And so putting this back, throwing this back into the DNR, my fear is that this position is going to one day disappear and we're not going to have any gains in this area. So I would hope that we would rethink that and try to move forward on using these lands the way they were meant to be used from the start of the state, when the federal government said these lands would be put aside for school trust. And the minerals, logging, whatever it is, whether it's gravel or, whatever's on these lands is supposed to be put back into the schools. So I recommend we don't do this. I hope that comes out.
Thank you. Any further questions, members? If not, thank you for the presentation. And I guess it's have a nice day.
As well. Thank you.
Yep. Representative Cantrell Claflin. We take a short break here while they're tracking down the... And Representative Green, if I remember, too, with Rukavina on the school trust lands, a large part of that had to do with his concern was a large number of acres that were in locked up in the Boundary Waters Canoe area, and getting that money, those lands switched out or transferred out or sold to the federal government so that we could put that money into it. That's that there's a large portion of that land that we can't do anything with because it's where it's at.
Right.
Representative Hoyt.
Do we have an approximate amount of what the trust lands mean to the school? I probably should know this because I'm on the school finance committee.
What was the question?
No. About the approximate value of approximate value of I don't know that. That is managed part of that's part of the transfer or the education committee. I think the only piece that's here is what they're doing in the here is transferring the fiscal agent part to the DNR. The office is going to stay the same. It's just transferring that, and it was explained to me from the School Board Association and from former Representative Dietrich that by having us as the, or the admin as the fiscal agent and having the office over on the on someplace else, that there was more paperwork and more bureaucracy that they had to go through, and it took them longer to get their funds released to the intended use. So that's why they're switching it back. But that's what I've been told. Representative Cutler.
Thank you. I can't address the funds, but it's quite significant, and it seemed that the money was, I've been off of it for at least 4 years, but it seemed to me that, as I recall, a lot of the funds were being used, always seemed to be managing something and never going to the schools, and that was the huge concern, is that while we understand that the lands that we own have to be managed, there should be funds, sales coming off of it too. So it would be really, this is probably not the right committee, but yeah, it would be good to hear from the school trust funds director and to hear what's going on there and how it's going. So, and
Mr. Chair, the real quick follow-up on that, I know we're kind of informal here, but and to Representative Hertaus, with the don't these lands also, can we hunt on these lands? Can we fish on these lands? Is that part of it? Or is it, are these lands held out so we cannot use them as part of a state benefit? To, I mean, we sell them, we can't do that. If we have them, we can, right? Or am I wrong?
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quite a bit of the school trust land is available to public access.
Yeah.
So that
represent you
with it. Yeah, being that it'll be private, then that might be lost to us. It'd be the only thing I'd be worried about with a sale. It's just a conversation till our testifier gets here.
Well, I don't disagree with that, but there is certainly an abundance of state lands in the state forests, in federal forests. The school trust land is one component of public lands, but it certainly would change that dynamic.
We're getting into a discussion here that's probably not part of this committee, but that's what, you know, we're waiting for our testifier to come. Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to point out that a lot of this is minerals, forestry funds that we also are able to use and sell, and I believe it's $33 million that come to the schools, so significant dollars.
Representative Green, if we
as long as we're waiting, Mr. Chair,
yeah,
I'll get my shot in. State of Minnesota is right now got about 17% of our land, and there's more than enough acres to hunt, and there's acres out there that no one's ever going to touch. The school trust lands, I believe, are 2.5 million acres, if I'm not mistaken. And I don't know about selling them. A lot of people think that I'd like to sell every bit of state land. That's not true. These lands were set aside for a purpose, and I believe they should be used for that purpose. And if they are school trust lands and are harvesting the assets off of them, that does not change the fact that they can still be used for other things.
Members, let's just take a short recess till we get our.
I could have kept going. I got a lot of stuff.
You want me to ask another question?
Before we recess, members, before we recess, and we now have a quorum, so we can officially be in order. Representative Hewitt, you want to take a motion on the minutes?
I move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hewitt has moved the minutes of March, approval of the minutes for March 7th. 2019. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you, members. Let's just take a short recess here till we get to sit tight here, and we'll tell our Representative Coughlin gets here.
So this is a delayed
delayed gratification.
No. You know, I open the can, and then it's gonna go poof.
You opened the can the other day. Yes. Mm-hmm. our discussion kind of scared the admin. They were just getting ready to leave, and all of a sudden they're waiting.
Well, at the governor's residence, she came and sat next to me to have a chat.
Basically, the land was the
that's good.
This land was, you're supposed to use the proceeds of it however you want to do it, liquidate it, sell it, whatever. The proceeds of that stay.
The problem is,
I'm selling it. Land is never going to go down in value. Those things are always in the deal. My argument is that if you take the asset and have it productive earning compounded year after year interest deposited in the school trust fund, it doesn't mean the money has to be distributed, but over time, you know, I don't disagree that it's a tangible asset.
I think I'm trying to get rid of that multiple.
Taking care of the ice and the rain and stuff this weekend, I think, allowed me to be susceptible. Better admin.
Well, it's been going around. You finally caught me about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
The other night, I couldn't. Every time I laid down, I would cough. Couldn't get to sleep because I was coughing so much. So last night, most of it's finally getting out of my lungs.
Dividing that
as I cough
by the 40 years, the annualized rate, and then that yet again into the acres.
Run up in my office. And I think the Freiburger committee shall take a little bit longer time.
And that's just a simple question. You know, we're comparing a single employee working for the state against median household income of 50%. Well, it's true, people.
All right, coming back. They're just too fine in private.
I mean, look at what we had happen on the tank. We had Heinz.
That could be wrong.
Yeah, that's why it might be true. I mean, I was Greg Davis, but for me,
so that's.
You know, like, I mean, a good example of it is Joel Michael and Steve Heinz.
Here we go. We'll call us back to order here. Welcome, Representative Kaplan.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for your patience. I've got three bills up in this time slot. Busy morning.
Good morning. Which one do you want to do first, 1355 or 1461?
Let's do 1355.
Okay, I'll move. Sounds like you're a little hoarse.
Yes, I lost my voice as well. Okay.
I'll move House File 1355 to be referred to the Ways and Means Committee with a recommendation that go to capital investment. And Representative Kaplan, if you want to proceed or have your
Yes, I wanted to just give a few comments about why the South St. Paul Suffrage Memorial is especially important. This is going to be the 100th anniversary in 2020 of passage of the 19th Amendment, and the first women in Minnesota, in the country, to vote after that passage were in South St. Paul. It's a small bit of history that connects us to a much larger past and connects us to the current voter rights issues that we're working on right now. I would be very proud to see a memorial to all the women who worked to get women's suffrage placed in South St. Paul. And I have Deb Griffith here and our mayor, James Francis, to speak a little bit more about the memorial.
And if you please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning. I'm Deb Griffith with the City of South St. Paul, and thank you for having us here this morning. We are excited with what's coming up within the next year and a half with the 100th anniversary of not only suffrage, but also the first vote in the nation. And we are very proud that it took place in South St. Paul. We know where it took place. It was in City Hall at that time. City Hall there no longer exists. It is now a park. But we would like to be able to put a monument, and not only declaring it in South St. Paul, but to the United States and to the state and all the residents within, that is where the first woman voted on August 27th, 1920. So the 19th Amendment passed on August 26th, 1920. And at 6 o'clock the next morning, there was a special election for a water tower to be built. And the women came out. Marguerite Newberg was the first woman to vote at 6 o'clock in the morning. We know 90 women voted that morning. We also know that there were two ballot boxes that morning, one for the women and one for the men. And a little history said that the women took the votes home with them to make sure that they were secure. Times have changed. But we would like to be able to place this monument. We don't have a monument in South St. Paul to commemorate this. And we would like to make that really the mainstay and the highlight of our celebrations as we go forward to recognize that South St. Paul women were the first in the nation to take place. And we would like to not only invite all of our residents, but the state residents and the country residents to come and celebrate with us. So, Mayor Francis, do you have anything?
Thank you very much.
Introduce yourself for the tape, please.
Thank you, Mayor James Francis, South St. Paul, Minnesota. As I was preparing to come today, I told my daughter, who's a Girl Scout, so she sent along some Thanks a Lot Girl Scout cookies. And it's not a play on the Thanks a Lot, but it's more about the idea that a young girl of today can have a memorial to recognize this historic event, not only just in our city, but in our state. I think it's a wonderful opportunity. I have some personal history with this. My grandmother died at 105, And she was part of this suffrage movement and not old enough to vote at the time, but then was shortly, a few years after this, was elected to office in the city of South St. Paul and served for many years as our city treasurer. And so our family history is part of this and woven into that. And just to have my daughter suggest that I bring cookies today to you to thank you for at least hearing us and considering the opportunity that we have to celebrate this milestone in our nation and to do that in the city of South St. Paul. So on behalf of our entire city, I thank you for considering this and thank you for our representative for bringing this forward.
And I know that when this was scheduled that committee aide Jim Geldman and myself didn't talk about this, but today's my mother's birthday, and she was big in League of Women Voters, so I think this is an appropriate day to hear this bill. Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I noticed there's three packages of cookies, so that sounds like about $100,000 a package. could you tell us just a little bit more about what your vision is for this monument? That seems like a pretty big price tag to me for a monument.
And if the pages want to start passing the cookies out on either side, whoever wants to answer the question,
I'll let our staff answer that.
We'd like to model the monument after the one that is in Seneca Falls, New York, which was the beginning of the suffrage movement. And so it would be what we're looking at is perhaps a bronze statue that would commemorate the first vote. We would also include information in there about the whole suffrage movement as well as the first vote. We took a look at what do those statues cost. And so we took a look at some of the twins. For Brooks, the Mary Tyler Moore one, and they are at about $250,000+ to build those.
Representative Hertas.
My math stands corrected, $75,000 a package. I'm done, thank you.
Any other further questions? Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this sounds like it's a pretty important part of our legacy. Did you happen to, and I don't like bonding, I'll be right up front with you, I think we shouldn't be borrowing on our children's future, but we do have a lot of funds within the legacy amendment. Have you guys thought about going there for the money?
We have, and we are looking at all of those different funds, yes.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Do you have a bill for that as well then? Or
Ms. Griff. Representative Kaplan.
Yes, there is.
Good. I look forward to seeing it. Thanks.
Representative Green. Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I do support this effort. I think it's a really great effort. But I would also like to acknowledge the fact, and I know this is a finance committee, but I haven't had an opportunity to speak with you privately about this. I would also like for us to acknowledge the fact that not all women had the right to vote. And so when we're presenting these, if we could also have some sort of acknowledgement that the black suffrage movement went on for women until the mid-60s. So it's just something I would like to have on the record that we're acknowledging. Right?
Representative Kaplan.
Yes, and I neglected to mention that this was not giving all women the right to vote. Thank you.
Representative Akam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Claflin, thank you for bringing this forward. I am also a member of the League of Women Voters, and so I think I learned something this morning. I didn't realize that history in South St. Paul, and so I think that not only that history as well as the fact that it's a park, I think it's a perfect place to commemorate this part of our history. So I appreciate you bringing it forward. I don't really have a question more. It was just a comment, so thank you.
Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And when I first moved to Minnesota, I joined the League of Women Voters, and it was with the women of South St. Paul and West St. Paul.
Thank you. Representative Long.
I just wanted to thank the author for bringing this bill forward, and it seems like it might be appropriate. There are a lot of different funding sources you could use, but wanted to note the original vote was on a bond, and so it seems like a bond might be appropriate in this case, too.
Any further questions or comments? Well, I'll renew my motion that House File 1355 be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with the recommendation that it be passed on to the Committee on Capital Investments. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Your next
Thank
bill.
You. Thank you, Chair.
And I think the mayor's testifier in this one here also. We got two more. And Representative Claflin, is it Claflin or?
Claflin.
Claflin, yes, I'm looking at him. Anyway, I'll move that House File 1461 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, again with the recommendation that go to capital investment. And if you want to present your bill and then the members, if you want to pull another chair up there, you can. Thank you. And then we can proceed with the testimony.
Thank you. This is a bill that would help us do some maintenance for the Doug Woog Hockey Arena. You may remember it as the Wakota Arena in South St. Paul. It has been renamed the Doug Woog Arena. And I will leave the technical explanation of what needs to be done and why to our city administrators.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Chris Esser. I am the Director of Parks and Recreation for the city of South St. Paul. With me, who is also losing his voice, is our arena administrator, George Emerson. So he's the person that's physically at the arena taking care of these items daily. Well, thank you for your time this morning. What our request is from the city of South St. Paul is we have, as you heard from a lot of history in South St. Paul from the previous bill, we also have a very historic ice arena in our town. And the Doug Woog Arena is over 50 years old. It was one of the first indoor ice arenas in the state of Minnesota. We've kept it going strong. It has a lot of regional notoriety. And what we're requesting is $350,000 to help offset the cost to put a HVAC upgrade system into our historic Rink 1. If anybody's ever been to Doug Woog Arena, formerly Wakota Civic Arena, Rink 1 is our historic rink that has been there since day one from the early 1960s. And so what this HVAC system would allow us to do is a lot of ice arenas, of course, are used in the wintertime during skating season, during hockey season, for a variety of skating type events. What we're looking for is to maximize the use of that building by the other times of year when we do take the ice out. When we don't sell a lot of ice in the summertime, we have two ice sheets at Doug Woog Arena. We do keep Rink 2, which is the newer arena that was funded through the Mighty Ducks bill and constructed back in 1997. We keep the ice in at that arena, but on our Rink 1, which is more historic building, we take the ice out. We want to attract events to be at that space to maximize the use and help us do some cost recovery there. It is a regional draw. However, without a HVAC system and a dehumidification system, it becomes very warm, very humid in there, as you can imagine, in the summer. If you ever go out to your garden shed in the middle of the summer, open the doors or go into a warehouse that might not be climate controlled, probably know what I'm talking about. So it's not very comfortable for people to be there. So our request is basically to upgrade that system, and this will also support during the ice arena season a little more comfort for the people visiting. But we're really looking to maximize the use of that facility in the summertime. So it has become a regional draw. We've had roller derby events there. We've had home and garden shows. At one time there was a rodeo there. We're not looking to do that. But it would be open for a variety of events, and it is a regional draw. So our request is for $350,000. There would be a local match to that for $50,000 that the city would commit in local funding. And just a little bit of history on the state of the arena. We have done some upgrades other than adding to the arena in 1997 by building a second sheet of ice. In 2014, our local voters in South St. Paul passed a park referendum that had three elements. One of the elements was an upgrade to Doug Woog Arena, where before the Mighty Ducks bill, the James Metzen bill, which we're very proud of, former South St. Paul Senator James Metzen, named in his honor, we did upgrade our refrigeration system. So our local voters, by passing that referendum, we took care of ourselves by getting off of the environmentally damaging R22 system. We now have ammonia system in the building. So our local voters did help fund that request. We did not make any requests during the 2016 budget round when a lot of the arenas were facing what we were formerly facing of converting their Freon system over to an ammonia system. So we took care of that. So now we're asking for a little bit of assistance to help enhance our building again for the regional nature of maximizing the use throughout the entire year.
Questions for the testifier? Representative Green.
Thank you. You had said that you wanted the money to offset the cost, but if the local share is only $50,000, that's quite an offset. But do you have those funds available now?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Yes, sir.
Excuse me. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, we do have, through our capital improvement fund, we do have some money set aside. We would have $50,000 we'd be able to allocate towards that project.
Any other questions? If not, I'll renew my motion that House File 1461 be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means with the recommendation that it be referred to the capital investment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. And members, that's...
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the time, Mr. Horning.
And you're on your way. Members, with that, nothing else coming up. We're adjourned.